Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Mitchell Davis, host of Taste Matters. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Off the air, I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. On the air, I get to bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by having these conversations with some of the most interesting women in the world of food. You can listen to the show live every Monday at 1 o'clock on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. On today's show, I'm so happy to be joined by Jess Eddy and Krista Freeman, the dynamic duo behind Finn and Phoebe's Ice Cream, a nationally distributed brand available in 30 states across the country. Hi, guys.
Hey there.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I think we have to have a full disclosure moment and admit that your dog and our dog, they're best friends. So this is a meeting of the moms. I want to talk about a lot of the creative things that come with running your company. We're just right now in the studio looking at some new potential packaging. But first, I want to talk a little bit about how Finn and Phoebe's got started and also how it's grown. So it was born, the company was born out of a love for making ice cream at home. Is that right?
Yeah. So we started making ice cream for fun. And I think what became really compelling about it for us was it was a chance to do something different that we didn't really know that much about, but we could do anything, right? Like you, when you're at home in your kitchen and you're cooking anything, you can make anything you want and there's no rules and you can, you know, you can be as creative as you want to be. And that was really appealing.
And what were you guys doing at the moment that that felt so different?
Yeah. So at the time we were working full-time jobs in the creative field and we actually weren't able to be that creative. So I think that's where that, the limitless boundaries, you know, that's where that came in and where we're having a lot of fun. And we just felt like we could do anything we wanted to do. And at work, we were told we kind of couldn't. So that's where, you know, that was born.
Nice to have no rules.
Yeah.
I feel like ice cream, at least the way you've described it to me, I feel like it's like painting or something. Like you have your ice cream base, and then it's like this blank canvas where you can come up with like a billion different things. What did your apartment look like at that moment when you guys first started kind of tinkering at home?
Well, at the time, we had this really old apartment. I guess the building was built probably sometime in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And so we had this, like, really big, old kind of farm sink. We had done some painting when we moved in. So we painted the kitchen with chalkboard paint, which became kind of like our inspiration board for a lot of the flavors that we were working on. And we would draw mainly Krista because she has that skill, not myself so much. She would draw these really great illustrations of flavor concepts that kind of later became like the crux of what you see in a lot of our branding and our packaging.
That's so cool. So it really, I mean, started at home.
Yes.
On the walls. A little bit of a running theme on the show with guests who have either started or run businesses is the sort of jumping off the cliff moment. And I think the kind of requisite preparation it takes to do that smartly. And I think of this as like, as if you're faced with like a big freezing lake or something that you're going to jump into, or a swimming pool like in October. And, you know, there's something really daunting about jumping into something that you know is going to be uncomfortable, but like you wouldn't do it if you didn't know how to swim. So I'm wondering what you guys, the jumping off point for you, I think, was quitting your jobs to really launch the company. And I'm wondering how you prepared to do that.
Yeah. So,
or did you prepare?
we thought we were prepared. So, you know, when we decided to quit our jobs, we had tested our product for like around a year to, I guess like actually a little bit less than a year, and gave away free ice cream and, you know, in response for like surveys asking people what they thought about the product, if they would buy it and what kinds of ice creams they're currently buying. And then we also just sold it at street markets and fairs, and we really validated our product. But then when we decided to quit our jobs, we went to Ice Cream University literally like 5 days after our last day of work, and we found out that we knew nothing.
And how did you describe what Ice Cream University is? I think it's a fascinating
program. Yeah, so it's at Penn State, mm-hmm. and it's very food science driven. So anybody that owns like a, you know, a mom and pop ice cream shop, a plant manager at Unilever, or somebody that's just really into ice cream can go to that. And it's a lot of, you know, seminars and labs. So labs around different types of ice cream bases or, you know, different like ice cream compositions and like the melting points and the mouth feels and testing that and testing different, you know, vanilla extracts and things like that. And just understanding like the principles of ice cream and like the composition of a mix and the different kind of qualities you want to have based upon, you know, what kinds of ingredients you're seeking. So,
and how long is Ice Cream University?
God, I feel like it felt much longer, but I think it might've only been like 4 days, Jess. Do you remember? But it was, sound
was
like
a week.
It felt like the felt longest so week long. Of our lives. It was crazy. And it was like super early in the morning to like, it was in sometimes like at 10 o'clock at night and the coldest place on earth. It was so cold. It was in January. Cause that's like the down season for, I think for any industry, but yeah, it was intense.
So what, how many people go to Ice Cream University? Like how many people are in your, would you call it a graduating class?
Yeah. I think they're, what do you think? Like 100, Jess?
Oh, wow. Like 100. Yeah.
Like 100.
Mm-hmm. And does it happen?
Every year.
So once a year.
Yeah. Once a year.
Wow. That's a lot of people who are getting informed about the ice cream business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you guys ever at this point, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but would you ever want to teach at Ice Cream University? Have you thought about that?
I don't
know. Full circle.
I don't know if we could teach at Ice Cream University. I think we gained a lot of the principles and concepts, but because at the time, for me, I was having a freak out moment, like, oh my God, what did we do? We have to reformulate all of our ice cream recipes at home. And so I didn't take full advantage. So I would need to go back and take the course again to maybe help.
Well, that's an interesting.
But it's mostly food scientists that are teaching the course.
Yeah, I think there's like a couple different aspects of it. One is it's very science-based and very food science-based, so you learn a lot about formulas. But the other aspect, I think, where we could probably offer value is like how to start an ice cream company as
yeah,
a small business.
Is there business sort of lessons in Ice Cream University?
There's not a ton. No. And I think that's where you have to do a lot of the learning yourself. And to kind of go back to the question you asked, like, we prepared as much as we could. I think we took a lot of the right steps, but nothing really prepares you until you actually do it and
sure,
go into business.
Yeah.
And then you kind of stumble a little bit and you figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
But Ice Cream University was like great for certain aspects of the business.
Yeah. I mean, I think understanding what we needed to do to bring our product to market. And right after we went to Ice Cream University, I literally came home and wrote a business plan like in a month. And I think that really helped us understand, you know, what we needed to do in order to grow to meet, you know, where we expected ourselves to be in like 4 to 5, you know, years. And we're always kind of reevaluating and looking back at that plan. And of course, it's just a plan, you know, things change. So
how close are you to your original plan that you wrote like right after school?
Actually, you know what? I looked at that pretty recently. We're pretty close. I think like the 5-year mark is probably what's more accurate. But we're pretty close in terms of the first and second year. The third year might be a little bit off. So,
did you make a lot of friends?
Actually, you know what? A lot of people that went to the Ice Cream University, we kind of keep up with. You
That's
know,
great.
Yeah.
We try to make friends wherever we go. So we do like a lot of food shows and stuff, you know, and we try to be super friendly with everyone. And
mm-hmm.
we're kind of goofy and, you know, we'd like to get to know people and we think it's, you know, it's a good way to be in the industry.
For sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the food world is pretty small, and I think when you're in a specific product, you know, segment of that world, it's probably even much smaller. It sounds like to me, I want to go back to that sort of right before you went to Ice Cream University, mm-hmm. when you guys were making a ton of ice cream and giving it away and getting feedback. I think there's something so fascinating about that. I think of it a lot as coming from a writer's perspective, I'm very sensitive to feedback, but ultimately I think it's so beneficial to step away from your work and find out what resonates and also what doesn't resonate. So can you tell everyone a little bit about how you did that and where you did that and how you use that feedback?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think when you asked me that question, I think back to college and when I was taking graphic design classes and I had this great professor, and one of the best things she ever taught me was don't fall in love with your own work,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we all have a tendency to really love our own things and what we do. So I think we both realized that point and wanted to really just get feedback from other people to make the best product that we could, right? and iterate on what we're already doing, but make it better.
Mm-hmm. It's really like, I think, validate it. You know, we had friends telling us that we should launch an ice cream company. And Jess came up with this great idea to, you know, let's do a survey at the first food fair we ever went to. And, you know, we compiled like over like 300 surveys.
And so were those surveys like physical
pieces of paper?
Yeah, piece of paper. Okay. Yeah. And we have them still to this day. You know, we asked questions, we got demographic information. We asked questions.
That's so valuable.
Yeah. It's awesome. And like, what brands of ice cream were they buying? Would you buy our ice cream? Is it as good, better, you know? And 98% of the people said that our ice cream was better than the ice cream they were currently buying. And I use that data in our business
plan.
And
not just because it was free.
Yeah. No, I hope not. But I think it worked.
We're not sure.
Yeah. But it was very validating because, you know, we got an SBA loan to start our business. And at the time, it was really unheard of to get SBA loans if you didn't already have a business that was making money, and we weren't making money. So that was very validating, and I had that information in the appendix of the plan. So
it also created this great unintended effect, which was we had this line that was looped around the entire place, and like everybody was like waiting for the ice cream because we were giving away free samples in, you know, in exchange for filling out the survey. And it made us look amazing.
Some buzz. Yeah. Instant buzz. That's awesome. And where was that, the Hester Street Fair?
That was at the Brooklyn Lyceum Fair.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the Brooklyn equivalent.
Yeah.
You guys have achieved a lot in a pretty short period of time. You're now based out of an office in Brooklyn. Your ice cream gets manufactured in Ohio. You're distributed throughout 30 states. Can you tell me a bit about the traction you've built and how you measure that traction?
Oh, God, that's a good question.
I looked up the term business traction before.
You know what? That's I think we measure our traction in different ways. And I think the way that we measure it more so is how we've, you know, our store footprint over the period of time. And I think also measured by like the resources that we have. You know, we're a small company up until recently. We didn't have any full-time employees, and we just hired our first one, Ellen, in July. So we've been able to achieve a lot with a little. And I think that's how we measure, you know, our results. And that's how we kind of pitch ourselves whenever, you know, we're, you know, in terms of, you know, achieving stuff with business. Sorry.
That sounds great. I don't really have much to add to that, you know, except for like, you know, if the customers like our ice cream, that's obviously why we make it and why we want to share it. And, you know, continuing to hear good feedback from customers is another way we validate. Less technical, but still good.
Yeah. I want to ask, so Ellen is in the studio today, so we can wave to Ellen, who is Finn and Phoebe's first full-time employee. But prior to Ellen coming on board full-time, it was really just the two of you. And you guys, it's evident that you're such an important sounding board for one another in your business. And as a couple in both business and life, I'm wondering, which has actually been an interesting theme on the show. I've spoken to a lot of people who run businesses together and are either an item or they're related or, you know, all sorts of different relationships that exist outside of business. How do you define your roles and how do you maintain that balance?
Ooh,
you hire Ellen.
She's really great actually coming in and, you know, feeling like, you know, when owning your own business and always interacting with the customers, like at trade shows and things like that, you know, we've been doing it for a while and sometimes we can become frustrated. And Ellen's always actually been really good at being kind of like, she knows, she can tell when we're starting to get frustrated and it comes in and she's always just so positive. So she's kind of like a mediator, I think, a lot of times for us.
To hire a third party.
Yeah. It's been one of the best decisions ever for our relationship and for our business. But, you know, I think that the way we kind of assign roles is that I typically will deal with the business side of things and I like to partake in the creative, but, you know, Jess is primarily focused on the creative side of the business, I think, so.
Yeah, and I think how we define our roles and work together is, like, a daily development, you know? Like, I think it's something we focus on every day and,
I guess,
like,
try
to make a better, you know, a better thing.
I guess it depends on what the tasks are of the day. I think anything, a big business, which to me seems like a daunting thing to run, it can be broken down into, you know,
many
actionable
small things.
Items.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So figuring out who's the best person to do
each
of those things. Do you guys start, how does that work? Do you start each day like with a list or like you have a check-in or what's like a day in the life in the Finn and Phoebe?
Krista has amazing to-do lists. She's too modest to tell you, but her to-do lists are beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm very like goal oriented. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have, you know, yearly, 5-year goals, 10-year goals, but you know, more accurately quarterly goals. And then, each of us have, you know, weekly goals, or I call them like rocks, and what we need to do to achieve those quarterly goals. And, so I have, you know, my projects that I'm working on, and I create to-do lists daily based upon what do I just need to get done today in order to help, you know, get to the finish line of achieving, you know, that, you know, monthly to quarterly goal. And I've been trying to work on really assigning my time, specific time blocks to get things done. But obviously with a business with limited resources, it gets really hard to figure out, you know, just to stick to that time slot, and things come up and you can always do that. But I find that's pretty effective in getting things done and figuring stuff out. So
a good schedule.
Yeah.
A good schedule goes a long way. I want to talk a little bit about, so you guys sort of, you have each other, you've got Ellen, you've got a lot of, responses from your customers. You take in a lot of feedback. I think you guys are also really good at surrounding yourself with other good advisors. And it seems like you've got a lot of like-minded business people in your life. I'm wondering what you look for in potential advisors and how you find them and how you approach them.
Mm-hmm. God.
Well, industry experience is definitely one,
yeah,
you know, which
definitely.
It can be hard to find people that have specifically ice cream experience. But I think, you know, being able to like have a conversation with someone and like the test is like, would you have a beer with this person? Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, then that's a good start. And then secondly, like if, you know, if they can really help you with something that if they can fill a gap that you currently can't, or maybe are having a hard time doing yourself, that's another great kind of litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
And what about when it's the other way around? Like if someone's coming to you for advice, because I feel like this is a question that comes up a lot, that, you know, people are either looking for advice, like you could be in that seat, or you could be in the seat of being someone who's able to give advice. What's your, let me see the best way to phrase this. How would you most ideally like someone who is approaching you for advice to ask that question?
God, I just feel that, like, you know, we get a lot of people coming to us to, you know, for advice, and we always like to help them because I feel like, you know, it just goes both ways. You know, when we're starting out, it was so hard for us to get help from people, and now we have this network that we've built within, like, you know, the food community, and I'm learning so much. And so I think for them going about asking for advice is just being, I think, appreciative of our time, you know, being very clear in an email what, like, you know, what questions you're asking, if you want to set up a time to talk over the phone, kind of outlining what the goal is of the call, and so I can understand where I can answer your questions in the best way possible, because the time is limited. I think it's really important for me, and that's kind of how I can figure out who is going to be not necessarily worthwhile, but, you know, they're going to be appreciative of my time.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's like, that goes across the board, like for any, you know, no matter what industry you're in or what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a good thing to be aware of, because just like we've all been in the position of, you know, needing help from people, and we'll continue to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the other side of the phone, it, you know, it's good to know what someone really needs and how you can be most beneficial to them, and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to ask you one last question before we go to break, which is sort of like a big picture question related to everything we're talking about, which is, you guys have really managed to not just get your foot in the door, but keep that door open in a field that neither of you have any background in. And I'm wondering what your advice would be for other aspiring entrepreneurs. Would it be to start with the product, or to structure the business, or somewhere else altogether?
I feel like it's a combination of both, Jess. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of our success so far comes back to the product, and the ice cream is mm-hmm. very good and people like it. Like, that has to be a requirement yeah. with anything you do. What you make has to be good. It has to be quality, right? And I think, I don't know, how would you answer the second part?
Yeah, I think it's really having a good product, but also having a structure in place. I think that when people come to us a lot of times for advice, they have a really great product, they think that, but they haven't really tested it with an audience. You know, they've tested it with their friends, but nobody outside of that audience. And also, they have no true understanding of what the true cost is to make their product.
And so,
I ask them, like, you know, so what's your margins? And they have no idea. I'm like, just go back and calculate, you know, exactly what
find
it costs.
Out what a margin yeah. is first.
Find out your margin is first. You know, really figure out what your true end cost is. That means like freighting all your ingredients to wherever you're manufacturing, bringing your product back to your warehouses, storing your product, and really understanding how to price your product accurately. Because if you go in at a higher price to a grocery store, you know, and then you can always reduce your price over time as you, you know, it costs less to make your product. But what if you find out later on you're selling your product at a loss and you, this is not a sustainable business? It just, you know, the store is not going to take you seriously because you are still new and starting out. And it's be harder to stay in business that way. So.
Yeah, sure. And one thing we tell people a lot is start small, but think big, right? So like think what your big vision is as a company, or think what you want to be as a company. You want to be a small regional company and you sell, you know, to X amount of stores and like then that's it? Or do you want to affect a larger number of people with your product and be a bigger brand? What's your vision, right? But you have to chip away at it at any rate. Even if you want to be a big company, you have to start small and start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great phrase. I think that's a great way to think about it, for sure.
And I think it's really important to really kind of have a vision when you're starting out, you know, and that vision can always change over time and you can refine it. But I think it's really important because it helps define what Jess is explaining, you know, it really defines your trajectory as a business and where you're going to grow.
Yeah, so it just impacts the types of decisions you make, even when you're small, you know. Like, I think one thing that worked well for us is we started small, but we always thought about how can we scale efficiently, and that worked really well for us over time.
Yeah, and that's like from starting our recipes and our home kitchen and scaling them up for manufacturing. We tested everything. We always think it can be limiting to what kinds of flavors we want to make, but we always make sure that it's going to scale efficiently and be as cost effective as possible. So
get comfortable with a calculator.
Yeah. Yeah. And Excel.
I'm sure also anticipating and just accepting how much you won't know and being open to that could be a pretty big lesson.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and I have a lot of fun questions about things like flavor development.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
It is so exciting to have this new medium.
Hosting After the Jump has been a huge part of me transitioning from being a blogger to somebody who has sort of real important conversations with people in real life.
My show, I kind of describe it as an audio trade magazine.
I learn a ton from the guests every week, whether it's restaurants, bars.
All the hosts at Heritage all come from different perspectives.
Everyone should be listening to this. If you're interested in conservation and practical approach to renewable food sources, you know, not this big industry.
Whether it's history, laws, social policies of food, I think people now take food seriously, and hopefully what's on their plate will become something very special.
And I feel that podcasting has a future, giving people information in a format they can really use on the go.
We need your support to keep these conversations going. To donate, visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hi, and welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm very invigorated by the Heritage Radio Network host mashup. I love that. I feel like it makes me feel like I'm on Glee or something. I'm your host, Julia Tertian, and I'm back with Jess and Krista from Finn and Phoebes. And we spent the first half of the show talking about how they've built their business and all the smart things they've done in that process. And all the steps they've taken. And I want to start talking particularly about the ice cream and what's in the container, not only just how you sell it. So I wanted to talk about flavors. How many do you currently have in production?
So right now we have 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Having personally consumed many pints of each, my heart belongs to the ginger cookie snap, which I highly recommend. Talk me through the process of coming up with a flavor and then the trip that idea takes from, I guess, your home kitchen or your test kitchen in the office to being in a pint on a shelf.
Yeah. So when we're starting out, it really, lots of times Jess would say like, oh, let's try this ingredient. And then I would elaborate and kind of come up with the final flavor execution and we'll kind of rip off each other. I mean, Don't you feel like that's kind of...
Yeah, I would blurt something out.
Mm-hmm. She'd be like, banana.
Yeah. And I would say it just like that. And then Krista would take that and like build on it, you know? Yeah. And then we would kind of like throw stuff back and forth, kind of like you would just like throw stuff on a wall. Like sure, you have ideas, you throw them on the wall, pick them apart, try to make them better. Mm-hmm. And eventually, like, it's kind of like being on a windy road, but eventually you get to where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
So a lot of brainstorming.
Yeah.
Step one.
I mean, like, definitely actually Jess just did mention a flavor the other day, and I was like, oh, blah, 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 this. I'm not going to tell you what the flavor is because we might launch it and I want somebody to steal it. But yeah, and I think it's also we're very inspired by the things that we're eating. And when we're starting our business, we were going out to eat a lot. And that's kind of what was like a creative outlet, you know, and that really inspired us. And today, less so because we kind of stopped going out to eat as much because we have a business, but we're reinvigorating
that.
Yeah. So I think we're definitely inspired by things that we're lusting over and eating at that time as well. So
yeah, and it's just like kind of a fun game to be like, how can we make this thing that we're eating or this one flavor we like an ice cream?
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's a fun thing to do.
And what kinds of factors come into play when you're thinking about that? Because, I mean, I guess... texture must be a big thing because, like, I know that when I'm at home and I'm eating ice cream and then there's, like, I don't know, some extra chocolate chips or something lying around and I throw them in, but then all of a sudden they're, like, so hard and they're not, like, the good pieces of chocolate that you get in ice cream. Like, is it figuring out that kind of stuff?
I think it's...
What are the challenges?
I think
there's so many.
There's a lot, and especially because we co-pack our product, we're limited a lot of times in, like, you know, what we can make because... all of our ingredients need to show up at the facility. So for example, you know, we had these cookies in the ginger cookie snap that we would hand bake ourselves. And we finally found a baker that makes the cookies for us. So, but obviously she can't make everything for us, you know, that wouldn't be scalable, but she makes cookies for two of our flavors. So we're limited by sourcing the ingredients. And then also when we're starting out, we're limited by actual like cash flow. We couldn't afford to make a white mix, which is like what you see with like the vanilla cinnamon and all the flavors that are like the sweet cream base, and do a chocolate mix at the time. So that was actually kind of dictated our first five flavors because we didn't want to make a chocolate flavor in the beginning because we didn't know if we were going to sell the ice cream or not.
Yeah. Many of our first flavors were really designed around the constraints that we had in the business, which you can look at it as like something that's very challenging, but you can also totally flip it on its side and use it as a positive thing that really helps you, because then when you have those constraints, you kind of can really narrow your focus on what you can do.
I'm kind of very, like, just from a cooking perspective, I'm not an ice cream maker, but, like, I know I was just talking to Jack, who engineers this show, about Thanksgiving, and I was saying that at my family's Thanksgiving, we've got a lot of members in the family who, some people eat certain things, some people eat other things, and that can, to me, be, like, a really, like, I don't know what to do kind of thing, but it can also be, like, well, within those constraints, you can sort of, all your possibilities become sort of huge because you have these limitations of what you can think about. And I think it's sort of counterintuitive, but I think that can be a really helpful thing because all of a sudden, if you have just these boundaries you have to stay in, then I think your imagination can go a little bit more wild in that sort of smaller space, as opposed to just being, you know, if everyone can eat everything or every ingredient's available to you, there's almost too much to think about and you can kind of shut down.
Yeah, that's an awesome point. And I think that that's kind of where we come in. And like, even though our flavors are really simple, I think they're really bold in flavor and they're unique in that way. And that's how we really set ourselves apart. And it can get really overwhelming because we typically just create flavors. We don't have a huge flavor line, but we have seven flavors that are really solid. And we always want to add on that line. But, you know, we're not going to have seasonal flavors that we're just going to bring in for a couple months and things like that. And so we kind of – I like the way you describe that, playing that tighter boundary. So
yeah, vanilla cinnamon is a flavor that was really designed around constraints. It's a good example of that. You know, when we didn't ever make a vanilla – flavor, but when we're about to launch this company, we said, like, no one's going to take us seriously if we don't have vanilla ice cream, but, like, we don't necessarily make normal flavors, so how can we make a vanilla that's, like, just different and really good, but really surprising still? And, you know, we had all these constraints of, like, we can't buy a lot of product up front, so we just focused on, like, one ingredient.
It's like a simple addition.
Yeah, it's a simple addition that we can add to make this really good and still have a vanilla ice cream that's not vanilla, right? And that, you know, we honed in on the cinnamon aspect of it, and not just cinnamon, but extra fancy Vietnamese cinnamon, which has this really great flavor and it's really sweet. And then that's how that flavor was born. It's one of our best-selling flavors today.
I love that, because if you do have this limitation and you're only, you know, able to add just one thing, one spice or something, and then you find, like, the best version of that spice, you make it a really special thing, as opposed to, like, oh, I have to do this, so I'll just, you know, nothing's mm-hmm. just, like, filling space. Vanilla cinnamon was on my family's Thanksgiving dessert table. I'm just going to add, because it goes very well with all sorts of fall, winter... things, apple crisp and pumpkin pie and all that. Yep. Everything's better with vanilla cinnamon. I want to talk about what the ice cream comes in and the whole process of packaging. I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but as a consumer, when you're in the grocery store, and you know, for me, I know when I'm looking at a freezer case full of like a million types of ice cream, and my eyes can just kind of glaze over a lot because they look pretty similar. I like that your pints, at least in my eyes, really stand out. There's really whimsical illustrations. I love that if you look very closely, Fluffnut is featured. What was the process of deciding, sort of, so to speak, the cover of your book, of the illustrations? And
yeah, well, a lot of that stuff came out of, like, our original roots, I guess, and that chalkboard that we had and those, like, sketches that we would do, you know? And
that makes sense.
The packaging is really an extension of, like, those very early days. And we've kind of just built on that, you know, and maybe over time, like, refined a little bit, but... that's really like how, you know, everything started for us.
I think that also what we were finding, and that a lot of the ice cream on the shelves of the higher, you know, higher tiered, fancier ice creams, they were a little bit like less fun. And our whole approach to ice cream is that it should be fun and enjoyable and whimsical as well. And maybe this experience would take you back to when you were a child eating ice cream for the first time. And so our whole approach to the packaging was a fun approach. And so going back to that time.
I feel like your ice cream, both in the flavors and the packaging, it feels to me like, I don't know, like the best, like, family movies where it's like the little kids enjoy it, but like the grandparents do too. Like everyone's
yeah,
happy.
Totally.
Yeah. That's
so
awesome.
I feel like it really fills that play. What's the one with, Macaulay Culkin?
Home Alone?
Home Alone. Yeah.
You're the Home Alone of ice cream.
That's awesome. We're going to quote you on our website.
Yeah.
Go for it. That's too funny. So it's interesting because I feel like the jumping off point for so much stuff, for the flavors, for the packaging, everything really came from like this home kitchen approach and, you know, the packaging mimicking like the chalkboard and everything. So I know you're not going to talk about new flavors you're working on, but I'm wondering about, are there any flavors that have been on the cutting room floor that you guys still think about that you'd like to resurrect? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some flavors specifically, you know, our first flavor ever was called Fluffnut.
Did the ice cream precede the dog?
Or? Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I mean, that flavor, and we had a goat cheese and goat's milk caramel flavor. I would love to do that one again. That was really goaty, but that was good.
Yeah, but there's two flavors. That one was interesting though, because kids loved it, and you could definitely taste the goat aspect of it. But it always surprised me how much kids love it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like that's that moment when you just can't argue with the survey, like with the feedback.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And those are just two flavors that it was just really hard for us to bring to market. And now that things have changed, you know, we could probably... I've been trying to figure out a way to bring Fluffnut back. I don't know if that will happen in the near term, but we wouldn't be able to call it Fluffnut. I know that. It would have to be some other name.
Sure.
Yeah. But
describe that flavor, because it sounds pretty great.
Yeah. So it's Ritz crackers with peanut butter and fluff, like sandwiched, two Ritz crackers, and then covered in a caramel just made out of brown sugar and butter, and then covered in melted chocolate. And then we freeze those and break them up into little pieces and mix them into a sweet cream ice cream.
That sounds so good.
It's awesome. It's the best flavor ever.
I guess pretty labor intensive, though.
Yes, yeah. And so just figuring out how we can make those and make it as streamlined as possible.
Maybe that can be just limited to Brooklyn distribution for for friends and family.
For friends and family.
I think
definitely friends and family flavor.
That's so funny. I guess that's an interesting thing to consider, the things that you can do at home. Like, that would be a big project, I guess, to do at home, but not like impossible, but to scale that for like a huge production would be
it's just so hard, you know. And also just like, you know, finding like fluff that doesn't have a bunch of bad ingredients in it, you know, that, you know, plays well over
maybe
time.
Maybe that's your next business, to
a fluff company.
Yeah.
I think Ellen might have actually found some, or Jess has found some, but yeah.
Yeah. I love if you guys can come back on the show just to talk about fluff. I feel like that would be the best title. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the ice cream, the flavors, what goes into developing them, and then the pint itself and what it looks like and the packaging. And I want to talk a little bit about advertising and how you guys get the word out. And I think one of the best things that you guys do is your van that you drive around in, which is, what's the term? It's wrapped.
Yeah, it's wrapped, yeah.
How would you describe, because it's radio, so we can't show a picture right now, how would you describe what your van looks like?
Oh, it's like our ice cream pint exploded onto the van. And yeah.
It's very colorful.
It's very colorful. A lot of illustrations. Yeah, it's hard to miss.
I mean, it's like in your face, you know, it's like on the front.
It's just really fun. And
in
like
the front of the car, it says, blow your mouse mind.
It's like, we could do anything. Like, yeah, let's put that headline there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What, did you ever think when you were like a teenager that you'd be sort of driving around with your wrapped van with all these phrases you've come up with? Is this what you've
definitely
envisioned?
Not, but it is kind of like being a teenager again. It's like,
yeah,
no one's telling you what to do, and you know, you get to make all the weird decisions.
What are some other creative ways you guys get the word out?
Yeah, so this past summer we did some wheat paste throughout Brooklyn and some of the city. We had some posters that were put up. You typically see them as like, you know, music venue posters or, you know, new CDs that are coming out. And we did that and, you know, in conjunction with, we did like a Brooklyn Flea Weekend, and we did that in conjunction with that with Instagram and things like that. We do like a lot of kind of guerrilla marketing kind of tactics. Ellen recently was going around to Whole Foods. We have a full-blown three-dimensional pint costume that you can wear. We take them to trade shows. And we are going around to outside Whole Foods and giving away free 4-ounce containers of ice cream while wearing the pint costume and driving customers into the store that way with coupons. So
that's pretty also hard to miss. Pretty great. There's some videos on the, I guess, the Finn and Phoebe's Instagram account of the dancing ice cream
costume. We have some pretty good moves. Not trying to brag or anything.
They're pretty great.
Pretty good dance moves.
They're pretty great.
Yeah.
I think, how much does that costume weigh?
It's actually really light.
Yeah.
And it's not super hot like a lot of costumes.
Mm-hmm. And your head is...
Your head's exposed and your hands and half of your arms.
To me, the whole mascot thing, it's like when you're in the... I'm saying this with no experience doing this, but like when your head is in that big, heavy, hot thing, I think that's probably when it becomes a little impossible.
Much. Yeah.
How many trade shows do you guys go to a year?
We've been really beefing up on that recently. So we're going to do 4 a year this year. So we're actually going to the Fancy Food Show in January in San Francisco. And then we're going to Expo West, which is the natural food show, in Anaheim in March. So, and then we're doing the Fancy Food Show again in June. And we did another one in Baltimore as well. So
would you say that's where you spend the bulk of your kind of advertising and marketing?
Yeah. The bulk of our trade spend is definitely within trade shows, and then also doing in-store tastings. So whenever you go to the grocery store, you see somebody sampling ice cream. That's really our main marketing tool, because nobody knows who we are. So the best way to get them to try our product is to actually taste
to
it.
To give it to them.
Yeah, give it to them and taste it in the store. And we do that in conjunction with actually coupons for people at the store.
So I think it's great, because I think if you're able to get someone to buy your ice cream once, I think they'll very much go back. And
hopefully.
That's very cool. My last question before we go into the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which I did not prepare you for on purpose, is that today is December 1st, and it's a little bit unseasonably warm in New York. But I want to know about what you guys think about selling ice cream in winter.
Oh, it's awesome.
Really?
Not as much during like the kind of December, January time. But February is awesome because people are kind of really getting into their winter. They're like, okay, we're staying indoors. We're hibernating. We're buying pints of ice cream. That's really great. The only time that's really off is, you know, January, kind of end of December time.
I guess that's the like New Year's resolution moment.
Yeah, people are like, and that lasts for like a couple weeks, and they're back on track.
So it's good for the exercise industry, but not the ice cream industry.
Yeah.
November, December can be good because of the holidays, and like you said, you know, people are buying stuff to go with their pies and, you know, Thanksgiving dinner and what have you. And when it gets cold out, like, I don't know about everyone, but like, I tend to like stay inside and like just snack incessantly, you know? So ice cream is definitely part of my snacking diet in the winter.
It's so interesting. I once spoke to someone who, she used to run a popsicle company, and she was saying that popsicles and things like that don't sell in the winter, but ice cream is like a year-long product.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know it is. That is a nice thing about it. Yeah, yeah. For pints anyway. Yeah.
And I think especially with Finn and Phoebe's ice cream, it's like the flavors are pretty comforting, and they're not, you know, I think they're what you want to eat when you're like on the couch.
Yeah.
For me, every day. But I guess especially in those cold months when you don't want to go outside and it's not as cold in your home, hopefully, as it is outdoors.
And I think we have, like, kind of, even though we have, like, seasonal flavors, we have flavors that are fruity, that are good in the summer, and then, like, the vanilla cinnamon is really good in the winter.
Do you see those numbers change? Like, does the coconut sell more in the summer than it does in the winter? Or?
Yeah, our banana and our coconut sell way more in the summer. Banana is always pretty strong because we really push that flavor because it's, I think it's really good. But vanilla cinnamon definitely spikes. Like, right now, it's number one, so.
Delicious. And what, I'm just going to add a little bonus question. What are some ways that you guys recommend enjoying your ice cream besides just a spoon? Because I know I've had the pleasure of enjoying a Finn and Phoebe's ice cream float, which was pretty delicious. Are there any other, like when I had the girls who run Gordy's Pickles on a couple of months ago, who are great, and we were talking about ways that people not only just eat their pickles, but use like their brine and stuff like that. Are there any unusual ice cream applications?
Well, I would say, I don't know if this is highly unusual, but beer floats are kind of popular these days. And there's certain flavors like the Vietnamese iced coffee and the dark chocolate salty caramel that like go really well with like a stout or a porter.
That's a cool idea. That potential investor advisor he might have a beer with, you could have a beer float.
That'd be the true test.
Then it's a real match. Okay, so we're going to go into the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which are the 7 questions I ask everyone who comes on. No pressure whatsoever. Who would like to start?
Can we hear the question first?
All right. Okay, I'm going to start with you, Jess. Jess, sweet or salty?
Ooh, that is really tough.
You can say both.
I'm going to go with salty.
Salty. Krista?
Salty.
Salty. What did you have for breakfast today?
Yogurt. Yeah.
A smoothie with chia seeds.
That's your, you have that every day, right?
I try
mostly.
To. Yeah. Yeah.
If I were to look into your refrigerator at home right now, this is interesting because you guys live in the same home. What might I be surprised to find?
Surprised. Well, I've got a lot of Thanksgiving leftovers and then pickles. That's not very surprising.
I think it's very surprising. I don't think so.
I think probably what you have for your Thanksgiving leftovers might be surprising.
Maybe.
Because you guys, did you have turkey?
We made, we didn't. We had a very untraditional dinner. We had hunter-style chicken over polenta with green bean casserole and homemade stuffing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, what else would you be surprised about? I love frozen chicken patties, the vegetarian kind.
Oh, that you can pop in the toaster. Those are really good.
We put them in a toaster oven, and we have these little, they're called, like, toaster bags. Like, you make grilled cheese in a toaster oven.
Oh, I've seen those.
Toaster bags are amazing.
I think I've seen those on the airplane in the magazine they give you.
They're awesome.
And do you eat those with anything, or just on their own?
I like to make I call them my big salad, and it's, like, arugula with the chicken patty with any kind of, like, vegetables in there with blue cheese dressing.
That sounds really awesome.
Yeah.
That's to counteract the ice cream.
Yeah.
Jess, what's your go-to snack?
My go-to snack is probably something crunchy, like a cracker. Or these days, it's pata chow.
But to give a shout-out to Martha Hoover.
Hey, Martha. Pata chow is amazing. It's like, you know, I'll say it because the audience doesn't know what it is, but it's like this Rice Krispie concoction with toffee and chocolate.
It's basically
every amazing
every topping every
so
condiment
good.
Like in one container.
Yeah, so that's
and you
actually
eat it by the spoonful.
Yeah,
that
that's
right?
been
yeah.
my go-to snack, and I just pull it right out of the cupboard and eat it with a spoon.
Krista, what's your go-to snack? Your frozen chicken toaster.
No, that's really good though. You know what? My go-to snack is probably I eat a lot of peanut butter and almond butter. Mm. I literally go through like a jar a week. So
any particular brand?
Just whatever I can get my hands on, you know, whatever is at the store nearby, preferably, you know, like organic, you know, peanut butter or almond butter. So
do you like them sweet or salty?
Salty.
And
definitely.
Crunchy or smooth?
Oh, I go both ways.
Okay.
You
good
know
for
what?
You.
Yeah. Sorry.
Let Jess recover.
Yes.
I'm going to move on. Jess, what's your favorite time of day?
My favorite time of day is probably... when I have coffee for the first time and getting up in the morning, having coffee and kind of just thinking or, you know, reading the news or whatever. It's very, probably one of the only peaceful times during the day.
And around what hour does that tend to be?
7:30.
Yeah. And Krista, what about you?
I get up around 5, and today was a little bit later, but when I'm reading in the morning, I typically take that time to read and do some other activities, and that's my favorite time.
Sort of nice and quiet before before the ice cream drama kicks in. Jess, where would you like to travel to next?
Ooh, I would love to go to Greece.
Ooh, good choice. What about you?
Eat.
Oh, God. I really, really want to go to... I would love to go to Vietnam. I'm obsessed with Vietnamese food. My dad was in the Vietnam War, and all his photographs from there, you know, are intriguing. I would love to travel there and see it through his eyes.
My last question. Jess, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
Macaroni and cheese. Mm. It hasn't changed too much.
Do you like straight out of the pot or baked or...
Just like straight... I'm simple.
Yeah.
Straight out of the pot.
Krista, what about you? Favorite meal from your childhood?
My favorite thing was actually my mom made the Velveeta's macaroni and cheese, but that paired with
frozen chicken.
No. with filet mignon and artichokes. I loved artichokes.
With your Velveeta.
With my Velveeta. You know, it was on the side.
There you go.
The vegetable on the side.
High and low.
Yeah.
Like she said, she goes both ways.
Thank you guys so much for coming on the show today. Where can everyone find Finn and Phoebe's online or in stores? Where should they look for you?
Yeah, probably your local grocery store. We sell at a lot of small stores in Brooklyn, as well as Whole Foods and foodiedirect.com. You can order online.
Yeah, and fresh markets as well nationally.
Awesome. Yep. And it's finnandphoebs.com.
Yep.
And Twitter, Instagram.
At Finn and Phoebs.
At Finn and Phoebs. Yep. Easy. Great. Thank you guys so much. And as always, thank you everyone for listening. Tune in next Monday at 1 o'clock for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.